This episode of Hubble Holding Up is brought to you by Luna's Llama Adventures.
What in the blue blazes is that, Steph?
Well, Andrew, I'm glad you asked. Luna's Llama Adventures is a new local company that offers you cute, cuddly llamas as trail companions, so you can trek through Humboldt's beautiful landscapes without having to carry your own stuff.
Now, that just sounds like a recipe for a winning nature selfie, if you ask me.
That's right. It's a very Insta-worthy, that's what the kids say these days, way to travel. So check them out at lunaslamaadventures.com. That's LUNASLLAMA adventures, in case you didn't know how to spell llamas.
There's two L's for some reason. It's crazy. It's Humboldt Holding Up, either Humboldt's most stoned or least stoned podcast, depending who you ask. Mostly least stoned, I'd argue. My name is Andrew Goff.
And I'm Stephanie McGarry. Well, we're definitely not just the medium no. amount stoned.
No, we either go big or not enough. At all. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, not in the average here.
No, Humboldt. Yeah. Are you stoned today?
No, Andrew, I'm on the clock. Are you kidding me? But I do plan to be as soon as we're done recording this podcast. Yeah.
Well, that's it's funny you bring that up, or I guess I brought it up. There is, you know, this plant, right, that's becoming quite popular. I think you know it. The kids these days are calling it cannabis. Obviously, a big part of Humboldt's story is tied to this amazing little plant. And, you know, around about the time that California voters said it's time to legalize this thing, up popped the Humboldt County Growers Alliance, or HCGA, which is a local organization that attempts to corral and advocate on behalf of the numerous people who legally grow said plant.
Yes, yes. And today on this very show, we have HCGA Executive Director Natalyn DeLapp, who was nice enough to come on and talk to us about HCGA's work, their recent opposition to this massive proposed Sun Valley project. You've probably heard a little bit about this. Possibly been reading about this on the Lost Coast Outpost. The effects of the drought on her members and just kind of the general direction of Humboldt's cannabis industry.
Yeah, it's a topic of some interest to quite a few people in Humboldt. So I'm glad that Natalyn was willing to step into the Zoom dojo and have a time with us. So without further ado, why don't we just get her in here? Yeah,
I say yeah.
Natalyn,
hi.
Connecting to audio. Hi, Natalyn.
How are you?
I'm doing quite well. It's yet another Zoom meeting, and we love every single one more than the last. Yeah, what's on your plate today?
Well, I just had a fun walk with Riley Topolowski from the city of Eureka, talking to them about what will become the city of Eureka's plans to allow cannabis events.
Okay. Well, you want to talk about that? What is, since it's on the top of your brain, we can just, you know, kind of kick off there or.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, it's not quite public yet. I guess the city is working on it and they've got a draft ordinance, and it will be going before the public and planning commission in some period of time.
Yeah.
So, I think in August. So.
Okay. So yeah. I mean, just this idea that, you know, as the Humboldt the cannabis capital of the world, it would be nice if our, you know, largest population city was able to wrap its brain around permitting cannabis events. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. It'll be a big draw.
Yeah. I heard the city talking about this a little bit. I didn't really highlight it, but you know, they're talking about the economic, you know, development plan, and they kept mentioning things about a cannabis, you know, ordinance coming up, another cannabis ordinance. But it didn't even occur to me that it would be that. I don't know what I was thinking it was, you know, I was just thinking like, oh, okay, it's just some other like zoning something, or I don't know, something boring, but that's not boring. That's really exciting.
really is exciting. And it's the city of Eureka is already leading as far as cities go within Humboldt County to allow for on-site consumption. Mm-hmm. And so that was passed perhaps 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so now the city is looking at how to authorize what would essentially be like a special event permit to allow on-site consumption at various venues, and also looking at allowing the Eureka Municipal Auditorium to become what might be like a turnkey venue to allow on-site consumption. And so then when event production companies are bringing shows into town, they could highlight them as cannabis friendly.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Back in the day, you used to just you just smoked cannabis at events. And,
yeah, I was gonna say no weed has ever been smoked in the
meeting. Yeah, I mean, I just am like, how is this? Yeah.
Now it can actually, now if this passes in the summer, which I believe that would be coming before the Planning Commission and the City Council in August and September, mm-hmm. And then roll out most likely next year. What that would allow is event producers to highlight and say, hey, in the city of Eureka, you are freely and legally able to enjoy cannabis and cannabis products at these events, without fear of getting arrested or fined or kicked out of the show. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think it's pretty exciting to think about, event production companies and, groups that book bands being able to attract some more interesting shows back up to Humboldt. I think people would come up from out. I mean, I think about that as possibly kind of a weird thing. Most of us would go to Sacramento or Portland or San Francisco to go see a show. Can you imagine people from those areas coming to Humboldt to see a show because it can actually be cannabis friendly?
Yeah.
I like the idea of this. Well, so why don't we get people, everyone in here and why you are walking and talking with city officials about cannabis policy. So you, Natalyn, were a part of the team that founded the Humboldt County Growers Alliance way back in 2017, ancient times, a couple months after Prop 64 passed and weed, cannabis became legal in California. And broadly, if I could kind of sum up what y'all are doing or attempting to do, you're acting as community organizers to try and craft a unified voice for specifically the permitted Humboldt cannabis industry. Does that sound about right? You want to add to that?
You did great, thanks, Andrew.
Oh well, thank you.
perfection,
you did it. Yeah. And you said
you should do PR for them. I'm sorry.
Oh, what did I say?
Growers, no. And that's a good thing. Sometimes people say Growers Association. And
No, I would never dare.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Yes. So, my name's Natalyn DeLapp. I am the executive director of HCGA. Took on this role from my co-founder, Tara Carver. She and I founded the organization together. She's just always been a keystone and cornerstone in my life and in this organization's development. And so none of this would be possible if it weren't for her. And, I'm really grateful that she and I came together. My background was from the environmental world and she came from the cannabis world, and we came together and formed an unholy alliance between the environment and cannabis. And she and I were working on the county's first land use ordinance for, it was marijuana back then in 2015, and worked together with our disparate groups, really found that we had a good symbiotic relationship and we understood each other and communicated well. And went through that process through 2016. Both of us were pretty active trying to bring people into compliance. And then Prop 64 passed in November of 2016. That was also the same night that Donald Trump was elected. So we were crying and going, oh my God, what do we do? And not to be dismayed, we said, it's time to organize. And We got started and kicked off HCGA at the beginning part of 2017. We formed as a trade association. And, you know, people are often like, what's a trade association? I'm like, well, all industries have trade associations, whether you're an automobile manufacturer or a wool grower or winemakers, they all organize around trade associations. And so that's what we are for the cannabis industry.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a way to get, you know, HCGA to click in people's brains if they hadn't, you know, heard of you or know what you do before. And I've read things like you're talking about where you put out where you compare your organization's work to what the Napa Valley vintners do for that region's wine industry. And I think maybe that's a good way to, you know, kind of frame people's brains. Like in what ways is Humboldt Weed like Napa, and what can Humboldt learn from the way that region has marketed itself?
Exactly. And, you know, Napa has a very interesting story. I mean, they suffered from prohibition. People were growing wine, wine vines in the Napa Valley area prior to prohibition. Many of them were cut and had to be removed. Some were able to be, you know, essentially stolen away and hidden during the prohibition era, and then replanted at the end of prohibition. And then it took 10, 15 years for those vines to redevelop into the place where they're producing fruit. And the Napa Valley vintners came together in that period of time, and they formed an association to protect their interests. And so, I mean, that was 75, almost 80 years ago. But trade associations basically do three things, no matter what they are. Typically, they all have government affairs programs to work on advocacy and policy. They typically work on market development and public relations activities for their industry and education, you know, making sure that their members have the best education possible to be able to work within their industry.
Yeah. You mentioned the advocacy work that y'all do. And I know this is a big area that you tout, that you provide on behalf of your members. And I think, you know, this is something that you can crow about based on an item that has been in the news locally recently, you know, which I'll try to summarize quick. You know, people paying attention will recall, like back in February, Sun Valley, longtime local lily growers came out and they said, you know, they were planning to switch it up somewhat with a 23-acre cannabis operation in the Arcata Bottoms. And I think it's fair to say that HCGA was probably the loudest voice in opposition to that project. The Sun Valley, you know, they revised their plan down to 8 acres, and that was appealed. And then just this week, you know, you have at least one county supervisor saying they don't want to permit something any larger than 2 acres. So I guess, you know, congratulations for your purposes. Why were you in such opposition for this? You know, like that was a weed project. Maybe you could explain what the problems that HCGA's members had with that particular project.
Well, the project as proposed that was released to the public in February of this last February was grossly out of scale with what was discussed in the development of two of Humboldt County's cannabis land use ordinances. So that would be the biggest piece. I mean, and then back in that project was originally applied for its permit in December of 2016. And in December of 2016, on a state level, that was 6 weeks after Prop 64 passed, right? Prior to Prop 64 passing, we had the original state law, which was the Medical Marijuana Regulation Safety Act, known as MRSA. And that state law said that there would be no cultivation greater than 1 acre for any cannabis operation in the state of California. So, and then Prop 64, AUMA, its law said that there would be no cultivation greater than 1 acre until 2023, at which time there would be unlimited cultivation. And then fast-tracked 1 year later in December of 2017, when the state was developing the regulations, at the last minute, at the 11th hour, that 1 acre cap was removed. And it was pure politics as to why that was removed, but it did. And when the state started allowing licensing in January of 2018 is when we started to see people and businesses stacking licenses. And that's where farms could all of a sudden go from what was authorized at an acre, and then they could start stacking dozens of 10,000 square foot cultivation sites on top of that, which is how and where and why we're seeing these really large cultivation sites out in Lake County, Salinas, yeah, Santa Barbara, et cetera.
Doesn't take long for people to find the loopholes.
So it wasn't until January of 2018 that we even realized, that one would be able to stack these licenses. And so for some reason, Sun Valley, AKA the Arcata Land Project, thought it was okay to apply not for 23 acres, the original project was sized at 38 acres.
Okay.
In December of 2016. That's 38 times bigger than what the state was going to authorize. And, you know, and then it was ultimately shrunk down to 23 acres. And even still, that was not conforming to what anything had ever been articulated during the two land use ordinances, 23 meetings for the second land use ordinance. I don't even know how many for the first. And it's like, at no point in time was anybody saying like, we want to allow 23 acre projects, and the county capped it max at 8 acres. That project has special, I'm going to put that in quotes, because of its industrial zoning is another loophole, but that's where what allowed that project to be so grossly inflated. And, you know, as an organization that really values law and process, it was something that seemed to be circumventing that.
So I assume that, you know, kind of broadly, you are in support of the 1 acre cap.
Yeah, absolutely. That was also 3.5 years ago. And I mean, when that acre cap was removed, when I found out, and when many of us, it felt like someone kicked us in the stomach. It felt like an unbelievable betrayal. We just sort of moved into mild acceptance. You know, we had to go through the grieving phases. And so now we're in acceptance. But
well, I guess kind of like, you know, philosophically, why do you want to keep it that small? You know, like why, you know, Sun Valley says, hey, we want to make a shit ton of weed. Like why would Humboldt County Growers Alliance be opposed to that?
You know, we've got members in operations that are over an acre, and you know, most of those are pre-existing operations or people that were pre-existing businesses that were able to expand because they had land use designations that allowed them to increase, and they had access to funding, and so they were able to do it. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. Where we start to see problems is when there are new lands that I don't think that people within the community really anticipated being opened for new cultivation, areas of the county that are more remote and sensitive. You know, there was a theme of like out of the forest and onto the farms. That was a talking point. But when we bring the cannabis out of the forest and onto the farms, what we're seeing is conflict with neighbors. Yeah. In areas where it's not been traditionally cultivated. And even in places where cannabis has been traditionally cultivated, like the Mattole Valley, there's still conflict within that area. And even in places that can be very pro-cannabis. And I mean, we're hearing some of the similar parts out in parts of Southern Humboldt. But, you know, Humboldt County is in many ways known for smaller cultivation operations. And I don't even like using the word small because it's subjective. Out of the 908 independent farms that currently exist in Humboldt County, the average size is 21,000 square feet and the median size is 10,000 square feet. And I'm going to double check that because I might be off on that a little bit, but you know, relatively, you know, small, you know, under a half acre, very few are actually over that size.
Yeah. Well, and I've, you know, as we kind of try and, you know, craft like what specifically, you know, Humboldt Cannabis is, you want, I don't know, there, it's like, how can we sell, you know, it seems like your organization is interested in like, you know, how can we sell Humboldt Cannabis as different than what is produced, you know, elsewhere in the state and in the world. And so, you know, when an organization like Sun Valley says, okay, we want to do this big project, it's, again, and I'm trying to articulate what I think your stance is. It's just like, it's not romantic. It's like, or you know, I know, or you know, like, you know, right? Because isn't that part of
it doesn't, you know, people have said that it starts to the brand, you know, and I don't know exactly what the brand and the image of Humboldt County is going to be as that's developed yet, but you know, when we close our eyes and imagine what Humboldt's cannabis industry is, it tends to be smaller families, independent, that they're surrounded by forests and nature and rivers around it. Sometimes people are growing food with it. And, you know, it's owner operator, they own the land, they live on the land, you know, that kind of yeah. image. And so if that image is what is ultimately, let's say, projected and sold to consumers in other parts of the state, and then they find out that there's, you know, thousands of pounds of weed that's coming out of these kind of industrial operations, whether they're, and I know industrial, that word is kind of a trigger word in Humboldt County. If you want to get people really upset, call something industrial, but you know, large scale cannabis, it doesn't fit the image. And that then becomes a problem for the consumer where we're saying this is what it is. And then they find out that this is actually what it is.
Yeah.
Then it's not, that's bad. that becomes a really big PR problem.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Then how do you think you can approach or the county, you know, can approach trying to keep sites, you know, smaller in the future? I mean, like you said earlier that in even the plan was initially to have the sort of gates just fully open in 2023, or that at some point there, you know, isn't going to be a cap on size. You know, and that there's always going to be places probably trying to do this, right? Trying to propose a really large scale grow site. You know, how can we continue to try to maintain these sort of smaller, smaller farms and keep that Humboldt, you know, brand.
Right, right. So that unlimited acreage, that's a state law. So in 2023, that law, there will be a new type. I forget what number, type 7, like, no, that's not the number, a new license type that will allow for that unlimited cultivation. But here in Humboldt County, the county, we have land use ordinances. It's just a matter of reevaluating our current land use ordinances, because what we want to do is all spend more time at the Planning Commission again. But doing that, you know, these are our local laws, and those local laws can be amended. And the county already has caps on total square footage of cannabis in certain watersheds. Right. But, you know, as we're looking at drought and water scarcity, you know, it might be a good time for the county to also reevaluate more new cultivation. And do we want more new cultivation? If so, how much and where? And what are the criteria to allow cultivation? You know, what are the impacts on groundwater? You know, what are, again, what are the impacts on neighbors? You know, where is this going to go? And perhaps the county gets to a place where it limits the total number of permits that are ultimately going to be granted, and or limits the total number of acreage that will be allowed. And I mean, that's like what we do with alcohol permits. You know, There's only so many liquor licenses in an area. There's only so many beer and wine permits in an area. So it's not unknown. Very easily be done, and, you know, limit size.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up the drought, because that was going to be our next question here. And when you're talking about like this big acreage, you know, initial proposal for Sun Valley, you know, something like, you know, 23 acres, that's one of the things that I think about is like, oh my God, that would just be using so much water and energy. And I'm sure that, you know, maybe they could have some plans for offsetting some of that kind of stuff, but, you know, something that's been just a big topic of discussion state and countywide, recently is this, you know, terrible drought year, that we're facing. And, you know, I'm sure that this is something, that's been, you know, heavy on your minds, at the HCGA too. And it just seems important to talk about, you know, how this is affecting the cannabis industry, and, you know, what is in discussion about, you know, trying to mitigate some of these impacts.
It is a big topic. Every week on our organization hosts our industry affairs calls. Mm-hmm. And it's been the topic that we've been discussing for the last 3 weeks. We're currently in the process of writing a policy paper on drought in the cannabis industry. We're not done with it yet. I would love to be able to talk about it and be like, oh, this is everything we've agreed to. But, you know, This is, I can share some of the concepts within it. But that's part of our process as a trade association. What we do is we discuss these topics with our membership. There's between 30 and 50 members on a Zoom call, just like this. And they share with us their experience and what they want and what they think. And for us as staff, we have pretty good listening comprehension skills and pretty good writing skills. And so we can synthesize what they're discussing and put it into a nice meaty letter, send it off to the county. We're in the process of that. We've been through that conversation, and we'll bring the document back before our policy committee, either next week or the following week for them to sign off on. So that way we run it through our democratically elected policy committee. They say, yes, we're good with this. And then that becomes HCGA policy. And so if you see our name and letterhead on something, it's gone through that process. As far as drought goes, you know, we're trying to look at and see if we can get estimates of how much water does the cannabis industry actually use. We are doing Public Record Act requests with the water boards. We're also talking with the planning department to really try to understand, like, well, how much water do we actually use? And then let's compare how much water this type of agriculture uses to other types of agriculture. So we're looking at that. You know, we're also looking at water conservation measures that can be employed and implemented. So, you know, when plants are in the ground with really well-built soil and living soils, they use way less water than if they're above ground in smart pots. So, and that's where some of the difficulty comes, is because plants are grown in many different ways, in many different climates, to many different sizes, in many different types of containers. And so getting that kind of estimate of like, well, they take this many gallons per plant per day is very difficult. You know, what we're also looking at is, I think it is possible. Well, first off, I want to, like, the state of California down in the Russian River recently said that there can be no surface water diversions during the summer months for the wine industry. We've had that baked into our laws from the beginning.
Okay. So
there's no licensed and permitted cannabis farm. Not just in Humboldt, like this is a state issue that has a straw to a surface creek in the summertime. That being said, our industry does use a lot of groundwater. And there are a lot of wells that were drilled in the last few years. And what that impact of drilled wells on, whether or not they're hydrologically connected and what are the impacts on springs and seeps and surface water. You know, we don't really have good science on that, but I do want to acknowledge that, there were a lot of wells drilled. And so there's a lot of groundwater that's being used, you know, and can we as an industry in a matter of time, and it's going to take time, but maybe 10, 15 years, we can probably get Humboldt's cannabis industry to 100% water storage during the summer months.
Hmm.
And I think that's could be feasible. Something that we might want to be working toward.
Okay, Goff, so you live in Humboldt, right?
That's true.
So you know that you're like legally required to enjoy hiking, right?
I know that I can face prison time if I don't go on hikes regularly, yes.
That is just a fact. That's a fact. But have you ever gone hiking with a llama?
No. What am I doing with my life?
Well, you know, you can do that now by booking a tour with Luna's Llama Adventures and reserve a llama trek for a day, 2 days or more. They also even offer shorter llama visits for your special events. It's amazing.
That is legitimately amazing.
Yeah. So visit lunaslamaadventures.com for more information. And to book your amazing llama encounter today.
I want to talk a little bit about HCGA's just membership. How many member farms do y'all have at this point?
About 275 licensed cannabis businesses. And so those are cultivators, manufacturers, retailers, distributors, testing labs.
Okay. Broadly, like who are these people? Like paint a picture for us, like of the all the varied kind of people you're representing.
It's like a rainbow. That's honestly one of my favorite parts of the job is our membership. They're all different and unique, multifaceted. We've got our membership, in some ways it's like we've got members that are about 75 years old down to 25 years old.
Yeah.
A lot of people that are married with kids. I've got members that are moms and business owners, and they're able to go to their kids' PTA meetings and talk about what they are and who they are and what they do and not carry that burden of shame. We've got second generation operators, people who were born into this, back to the lander parents. We've got members who are the back to the landers, not as many, and just demographically, not a lot of the baby boom generation transitioned into the new industry. Partly because people are, in the kind of the retirement twilight years. Mm-hmm. So, starting new businesses based on a completely unknown system and taking any of what might have been like their retirement savings with no other systems and like investing that into an unknown, probably not the most wise decision for them. But some did, but mostly, the operators, cultivators, it's really a lot of families. It's a lot of families.
Now I know this might be a hard question for you to answer because I'm sure you love all your children equally, but do you have some specific members that, impress you that you could talk about anyone doing anything especially innovative that excites you? Like who's your starting five? You talked about, your veterans that are in the twilight and you got the young up and comers players in development, but like who are your star players out there?
Oh my gosh. You're going to get me in trouble.
Yes, that is my, that's what I want. Yeah.
I really love, gosh, Amaranth Farms.
Okay. And I don't know what's Amaranth Farms. Yeah.
That's Karen Hessler and her husband, Tommy. They're first generation. And they have successfully made that transition, and they are building a business with products and brands, and they've got working with their family and son, who has processing in Arcata. So okay. I just love to see what they're up to. And Elaine Roy and her husband, Prim, that they're Dewpoint Farms up in Honeydew. Yeah. She's second generation. It's been really great to see her develop up her farm in an area that she calls Honeydew Highlands. So it's up on the ridge, not down in the valley. and just being able to see her product develop at like the Papa and Barclay Social. She's getting a lot of shelf space around not just Humboldt County, but starting across the state of California.
Yeah.
And you know, again, raising their kids, you know, so her kids will be third generation. I think of Hannah and Riley White, their Emerald Queen out in the Willow Creek area. I've seen some of the most insanely big boomer plants out there that were like 12, 15 feet. I don't know. I have no idea how big they were. They were absolutely massive, gorgeous plants. She kind of lives in this perfect little enclave surrounded by the forest around her. You know, again, it's a family that they've got a family operation. They're raising their kids out there. She's another one of their products that's being hosted at Papa and Barclay.
Yeah.
Who else? Great. I know. I'm like, we're going to put me on the pressure.
Yeah, no. And like, you know, these farms that you're describing, like, you know, how big are they? Like, cause I guess.
They're all of those are about 20 to 30,000 square feet is kind of that average size.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, Craig and his wife, Melanie, they're Alpen Glow down in Southern Humboldt. They're small. I think they're about 8,000 square feet. You know, absolute permaculture, living earth, regenerative farmers, polyculture, food and garden, and just creating incredible ganja.
I ask, you know, because like, I think you and I have talked about this before, just like, I really feel like there is, you know, this kind of, you know, a divide in Humboldt as far as like, I don't know that a lot of people who aren't in the cannabis industry have a real grasp over what these farms look like. And it's like, you know, how do you get, you know, humble people that aren't necessarily in the industry to have a pride in, you know, what this area produces? Cause it seems like that would be to your benefit. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and we now have two opportunities for local people and
to
visit permitted and licensed cannabis farms. So Johnny Casali and his farm, Huckleberry Hill, it's in the Bryceland area, is now open for public accommodation and tourism. I believe you can find out information on his website, Huckleberry Hill Farms. And Johnny is just an absolute incredible ambassador for this
community. Yeah, that's what I
say. You know, he's one of the people that has served time. And had to give up his freedom because of cultivation, and was able to come out on the other side of that and be granted, you know, authorization to continue to do what he loves. And he cultivates, you know, plant varietals that his mom grew. And I really encourage folks to reach out through Huckleberry Hill. And if you're in the Southern Humboldt area, you know, go down and go visit his farm and, you know, hear his story.
Yeah. Anybody, right? Just anybody can go.
Anybody can go. Yeah. You have to register through his system. And I mean, because he can only allow so many visits. visitors per week, and people have to come in vans because we can't create too many impacts on the neighbors, stuff like that. And additionally, there's another farm up in Willow Creek. It is run by a man named Lucas Sanders, also known as the Emerald Kid. And he has created the Terp Mansion.
Somebody told me to follow this guy on Instagram.
Okay. I gotta hear more about this.
Have you checked this out?
I have not. This is the first that I'm hearing about this. Amazingly.
You explain the Emerald Kid, Natalie.
The Emerald Kid is Lucas, and he has a relatively small. I don't know how many square feet it is. Maybe 5,000 square foot mixed light. Operation. So he's able to cultivate year round. And what's special about his site is because of how his permit was processed through the county, he does have on-site consumption allowed. And he's got a system worked out with some of the local dispensaries. So if you hop on one of Matt Kurth from Humboldt Cannabis Tours buses, they'll stop and pick up the cannabis products at the dispensary, so everything's legal and run through track and trace, and all the taxes are paid.
Yeah.
And then drive out and are able to enjoy his farm and
so, smoke weed. So the Emerald Kid is a member. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And somebody told me to look at this, and it was, and I was like, okay, and I kind of scrolled through it, and it was like, oh, he's crafting a character. Like, that was my kind of impression of it. And like in a good way, where it was like, oh, he's one of these people that is pushing, hey, look what I'm doing. It's cool. I'm proud of this thing, this wacky, over the top flamboyant world that I'm creating out here in Willow Creek.
Yeah.
I'm the Emerald Kid. Check me out.
and the Terp Mansion, is this what his farm, or is that okay. Yeah. I was just wondering, is this also like, in my mind, I'm thinking like the Terp Mansion is also like a place you can stay or something and just,
And that's,
if you get too stoned, you might have
to. If you get too stoned, you got to go camp out at Kim 2 or get to meet at the Coho Cottages,
Yeah.
It's a great place. Yeah. And that's what I want to see more, as we're talking about this, about Humboldt County, is so often compared to, Napa. The Napa of cannabis, and like I think that this is what we're going towards a little bit, is more stuff like that, like this guy having the farm and on-site consumption allowed, where people can really come like at a winery and go tour the grounds, and then at the end sample the product, and then like even have a nice place, to stay and, eat there too, possibly, right?
Yeah, of course. And I mean, and just nothing about cannabis is easy. The state of California, which is my home state, and I can't imagine living anywhere else, has created the most complicated regulatory system that's ever been devised.
That's California.
In the state of California.
Yeah.
So, and this plant is tracked and traced from seed to sale. So, when we talk about public accommodation, that is a land use consideration. So what if your friend and neighbor decides to turn their residence into a commercial business, what are the impacts on you? So time of day, vehicle trips, noise impacts, all of these, sanitation. So do you use porta potties or do you use septic systems? Well, a lot of places out in the hills don't have septic. So that parking, ADA, that stuff's all very, 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 very expensive. Getting a building built out in the hills to legally accommodate people, I mean, you're talking $150,000 to $300,000 just to go through permitting and all of these things that you have to do to to get it done. So it's very expensive. Building infrastructure is expensive. It's time consuming. So, you know, developing smoother pathways through the county to allow for this needs to happen. You know, I would love to see that the county, you know, as far as public accommodation, like we could go down the route of like glamping.
Yeah. You know,
seasonal, really cool tent systems where it's not like a campground and it's not an RV park, but things that can be like put up in April, taken down in October, and that can give that kind of, you know, lodging experience. You know, I think we need to start thinking in some ways out of the box because, you know, I mean, literally like it's septic systems are going to be a big impediment. Insurance is a huge impediment. There was a bed and breakfast, a bed and breakfast that was out in the Elk River area that, you know, these insurance companies don't know how to handle cannabis.
Yeah.
And they think it's dangerous. And so they'll give astronomical rates to operators that then, you know, I was talking to the owner of that bed and breakfast. He's like, I would have to rent this place out for $400 a night to cover the insurance. Mm-hmm. And so there's just, yeah, you know, so it's like, I promise you this industry wants to develop into everything that everybody's imagination wants. It's just money, time, you know, and insurance laws, it's still really, there's a lot of impediments to being able to see this industry blossom into what we all want it to be. But that's why we have to keep working.
Yes.
That's why we'll
get there. We'll have the magical bed and breakfast, Napa Valley style fancy places of my dreams soon enough.
You know, I ask listeners to just be patient because, and I mean, that's been a conversation over the last several years of like, well, the cannabis industry doesn't, you know, why should we contribute to tourism for cannabis? Because there's nothing for anybody to do. Like all they can do is go to a dispensary. And it's like, well, you're right. There wasn't anything to do.
Yeah.
But now there is, and it's slowly coming. And it was because the county allowed for public accommodation. It's because we've had businesses that were willing to be entrepreneurs and explore roads that have never been crossed before. And, you know, that path starts to get cleared, but it's not easy to be the first.
Yeah.
So I want to switch gears a little bit. So, you know, while there are hundreds of permitted cannabis operations here in Humble, obviously there is still, you know, a ton of activity in the black market or the traditional market, as some call it. And, you know, all of your members have gone through the process of becoming legal operations. Like, what is your message to the people who are still operating outside of that legal cannabis realm?
I don't know. I stop and don't get caught. I don't really know.
Can you sympathize a little bit? Like,
we have operators whose family didn't, you know, and it creates an argument at the dinner table at Thanksgiving, like some, you know, people are hedging their bets. You know, some family members got in, some got out. I mean, I hate to say it, but like repeating, no, all of our members that have made the decision to come in. And when I say all, the majority of them that have made the decision to come in are deeply invested that there's no hopping back out unless you sell the business, and just exit and walk away. But very few of them would recommend it, you know, like, and I wish I could say that, like, I've got 900 operators that are like, come on in, the water's warm. No, it's not. It's not, it's crowded. It's sharky. It's tenuous at best. It's like, it's kind of like the Pacific Ocean. It's beautiful from afar. It's precarious, you know, and that's just the reality. And it's complicated, but
ultimately this is what's happening.
Right? This is
you're not going to be able to, you know, you might get a few more good years in, but you know, it's not a long-term plan to stay in
no. I mean, it's really hard because the county implemented its Eyes in the Sky abatement program, which was essentially the most effective and inexpensive way to deal with cannabis cultivation in the hills. They've got satellite imagery that updates on the hour. You know, they can see what people are doing. And, you know, they've got a couple people that are sitting in an office looking essentially at Google Earth and, you know, writing letters with a stamp and mailing them out and are like, look, we suspect that you're cultivating cannabis. You know, if you're not, prove it. And if you are, then you need to stop or come into compliance. And if you don't follow these steps, which have been pretty thoroughly laid out by the county over the last few years, then we're going to move into abatement with these $10,000 a day fines. And the county has been quite effective. Of course, if there's a lot of people in Southern Humboldt and there's a lot of old timers and, you know, really small operators that have received those letters. And for them, it feels like an assault on their culture. And so it can be really challenging because we've got people who have long since been part of our community, that have long since been part of our culture, that made those choices not to come in. And then they feel like they're being the target of the county's abatement program, while what seem like the big growers are being given either getting off or giving a pathway forward. So I say all of this because it's really so challenging. It's like on one hand, the county wants to be nice and, you know, human and like, okay, you know, let's figure out a pathway forward. The county put into place this less than 2,000 square foot cultivation ordinance. That's like a fast pathway. If you're cultivating less than 2,000 square feet and you live in your home and that home has been there since prior to 2015 or 2016, then the county will give you a fast track pathway to permitting. But then you have to play in the regulated market. You're paying Measure S taxes and you're only selling to licensed distributors.
Yeah.
So you're now in the game. And I think to date, not a single person has applied for that under 2,000 foot. And I think that ordinance was passed last year in November. Wow. So for whatever reasons, it's not been popular, even though it was seen as like this alternate route. So it's sort of like, what's going on there? You know, why not? So.
Yeah, I wonder.
Well, I know we have a lot, you know, that we could talk about. I know we're getting close to our time. So one thing I wanted to do though, was I wanted to talk about you a little bit. It seems like it'd be good to, you know, find out, you know, how you came to develop a passion for this work. And I thought, you know, one way, if you're willing to find out, would just be to ask you about like what your personal relationship with cannabis is, like as a consumer or otherwise. Like, I don't know, do you have an answer for that, or like a good story of the first time you smoked weed, or this? I don't know. Like,
I'll tell you something, and it's funny and it's embarrassing and it's old.
Yay.
I'm originally from Southern California, and when a person grows up down there, we don't necessarily realize that there's seasons. You know, right. Like, and so you know, you go to the grocery store. The sun is it's like you go to the grocery store. There's no difference. Like, there's fruits and vegetables all year long, and so. Mm-hmm. And then when I was in my early 20s, I lived in Northern San Diego in a place called Encinitas. And I was kind of a surfer, you know, early 20s doing yoga and waiting tables. And my boyfriend smoked a lot of weed. And I was like, you need to stop buying weed like this. Like, why don't you just get a half pound and sell it? And then it can like supplement your own pot smoking habit. And I remember us getting like waiting for October. And I was like, why can't we get weed right now? And they're like, well, it hasn't been harvested yet. And I'm like, what do you mean hasn't been harvested? And sure enough, and you know, come late October, we ended up with a half pound of Humboldt weed and smoked a lot of weed that.
Okay. Yeah.
I was waiting for the conclusion. Yeah. Did you sell it? Did it
work? We at that point in time, there was a 6-foot gravity bong that lived behind my couch, which I did hit one time, but that was a one-time thing.
I don't know. Why was it a one-time thing, Madeline?
Because I think I like laid on the couch for.
Yeah. Have you ever smoked a gravity bong?
I don't think
it was one of those the graphics. It was one of those purple. Oh, man. With, like the Joker.
Oh, wow. Yeah. The first time. Yeah. The one time I smoked out of a gravity bong. Yeah. Okay. Never again.
This was always the plan, Madeline, was just to have this devolve into like, one time I smoked some weed. And
we were, we were trying to, we were all reminiscing about the dumb ways to smoke weed when you were in high school, you know, out of an apple, out of a can, you know.
God, help us, like out of a can? What were we thinking?
That was the apple is definitely the better method than the can.
We were rebels.
Yeah. It was, God, I mean, I remember we had a choice back when I was in high school. It was like, are you going to get green bud or brown bud? Because we could get the Mexican brick weed. And like, if you had money, you're buying green buds. And but now it's like, there's so much variety. It's like, well, what type do you want? Blah, blah. Like it was green or brown. And like the fact that we actually got green buds was way better than my friends that were from not California.
Yeah. So you're selling weed in San Diego. And
I was waiting tables and slinging a little weed, just a little.
Okay. And then, so at what point did you come to Humboldt?
I was actually because I was from the coast, I've always loved the ocean, and I was planning on studying marine biology. Mm-hmm. Was either going to go to Hawaii or San Luis Obispo. A friend of mine had come up to Humboldt State and was like, holy cow, that place is incredible. They've got this amazing biology program. You should drive up the coast and go see it. And I had just been to San Luis Obispo. I had just been out to Hawaii, and I came up to Humboldt and I froze my butt off in March. I was highly underdressed.
Yeah, we have seasons.
We have seasons. Yeah. And
that's how you learned.
Yeah, I hadn't learned yet. I'm like, a hoodie and UGG boots are insufficient for March. But came up to Humboldt and just absolutely fell in love and went and checked out the university. And I remember Dr. Steve Martin. Like, I walked up and he's like, nice to meet you, Madeline. And like, already knew my name was, you know, and I still am friends with him today. And I was like, wow, someone who actually cares, and I'm not just going to be a name on a roll, you know, call sheet. Mm. And, you know, they showed us the departments, and I was walking around the Arcata Plaza, and that horrific, the tsunami bell went off at noon, and I like almost dropped to my knees because I'm like, what's going on? You know, the noon bell that's not there anymore. And I was I'm like,
what? The noon whistle. Yeah.
And then I picked up the newspaper, and it was the North Coast Journal at the time. And I was like, just reading like what's going on in this community. And really just seeing that there were people that were willing to take stands. I think at that point in time, like it was still like the PL lawsuit with Gallegos, and it's the very end of the timber wars. And I was like, wow, this is crazy, you know, and came up here and chose Humboldt over Hawaii and San Luis Obispo.
Yeah.
Wow.
And never left.
And I left San Diego. So it's like three really places that are considered just absolute gems. And I think that Humboldt was better. And
Yeah.
Yeah. And it is
that Hawaii. Yeah. Suck it, Hawaii. Yeah.
But it's still an island. So I got kind of the best of all of those worlds, like a little protected, isolated island.
We're an island.
Yeah, I say that
a lot.
Okay.
Yeah. I just fell in love with the place. And it was, you know, I was talking to Andrew yesterday. It's like, it was the right climate. And it was the right ecosystem for me. And I've been really fortunate and lucky and been able to put down my roots and grow and thrive. And I just love it here. So,
Yeah. Well, I know you have to get going here pretty quick, but just, real quick, like what's on HCGA's to-do list? I know y'all take an interest in helping to guide and develop state policy. I heard you're planning a big event for your members. What's on the kind of immediate horizon?
Oh my gosh. Well, state policy never ends, but fortunately it follows a pretty predictable timeline. I always encourage people to take a look at our website, hcga.co, C-O, no M.
Why is there no M, Natalyn?
Because some company already had the M, com, and they tried to sell it to me for $8,000. And I'm like, there's no M that's worth $8,000. Okay. So we're .co.
Okay. So now you're a site from Columbia.
Or Colorado or something. State policy goes on. The three agencies that currently govern cannabis are consolidating into a single Department of Cannabis Control. So that's going to be interesting. We're working on, streamlining taxation for cultivators on a state level. Locally, we have been working with the county on trying to find pathways forward for on-farm trimming to help increase viability for these small farms. We are writing and submitting a proposal to the county for how HCGA, in conjunction with our sister organization, the Humboldt Community Business Development Center, would implement a county-wide cannabis marketing effort. So that was big that we talk about, but we'll come back at some point in time.
Okay. Yeah. That's a big thing coming up, but
that's a big one. We've been just so happy that pandemic restrictions are lifting. And so we've been hosting mixers around the county. We're doing an event on August 19th. It's going to be like a member appreciation, business to business networking barbecue, kind of event. And what else? We do educational workshops through our online, Zoom. That was one of the things. It's like we were doing all these in-person workshops, and they're great for the attendees that are able to make it. And when the pandemic happened, we're like, oh my God, what are we going to do? And we just transitioned into Zoom workshops, and they're recorded. And now we have like on-demand professional development workshops that we've continued to build out. So it's like for our members, maybe they weren't able to catch that HR seminar on independent contractor versus employee, fun topics. But so we've got all those loaded out on our like HCGA YouTube channel. So just continuing to provide more, professional development and workforce development training for our operators. To make sure everybody's gonna, we gotta keep everybody. We need them to make it. We need our industry to survive and thrive. Like I said, there's about 904 independent cultivation operations in Humboldt. There's probably about 125 manufacturers and distributors in the county. So, we're talking about 1,000 businesses. And so, I think of that group of operators like a group of endangered species. As far as the cultivators go, like we're not making more new legacy cultivators.
Right.
Like that there's a set amount, like either people transitioned or they didn't.
Yeah. And that institutional knowledge kind of lives or dies with them.
Right. Right. So it's like, they're like old growth. Like we can't make new.
We're going back to epic, roots there.
Okay. We can't make new old growth. So, if we want to maintain the authenticity and what makes Humboldt really special and the history and all of that knowledge, we really need to keep the operators who who spent the last decades building this as the leaders in what we're going to see into the future. So that's what we're working toward.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I say, yeah, there's lots else that we could talk about, but I appreciate your willingness to come in and be transparent and have fun with us and talk to us. And
I appreciate it. I'm glad
I can endure another Zoom.
Go outside now, Madeline. Yeah.
I gotta toggle back over to drought conversation. So
okay. All right. Thank you so much. And anyone that wants to learn more about Humboldt County Growers Association, just kidding, Alliance. they can go to hcga.co.
Co.
All right. No way. Thank you, Natalyn,
for joining us.
Bye.
Thank you so much to Natalyn Delap of HCGA for chatting out with us today. And
.co.
.co.
.co. I just want
to
remember that.
Yes. Don't you dare put that M on there, because that'll take you someplace else that isn't where you want to be. But yeah, thanks to her for talking to us about all this stuff, you know, their view on Sun Valley and the effects of the drought, and also just for sharing with us her experiences with weed way back in the day in SoCal.
And I would say, you know, we should go to a cannabis farm. Everyone in Humboldt, go visit a cannabis farm sometime this summer. Get a better understanding of this product that is a big part of our local economy. That seems like a good thing to do. Yeah,
let's
all
do
right,
it.
Humboldt, your homework is to go to all of the farms.
Be safe out there.
Later.
Okay, Steph, so you've been telling me about Luna's Llama Adventures, whereby I can rent a llama to go hiking for a day or overnight. Mm-hmm. But let's say I've broken my legs, or maybe you've broken my legs because I've interrupted you on the podcast, as I tend to do. And I can't go hiking. Maybe I'm having a party, a celebration at my estate. And I want to spice it up a little.
You want to break your legs a little bit more.
Let's say I want to spice up my party with some llamas. Is that something that Luna's Llama Adventures would help me out with?
Why, Andrew, yes. Yes, it is. You're in luck, because after I have broken your legs, I am so kind as to bring some llamas to your party to say that I'm sorry. You can book a llama encounter for your next party or special event, and you will be the talk of the town, of whatever Humboldt town you live in, I guarantee. Check out ludaslamaadventures.com to find out more and book your llama visit or trek today.
I tell you, these llamas are really going to help me get over the violence that you've inflicted upon me. So I appreciate it.
Nothing says, sorry, I broke both of your legs, like a visit from a llama. Everybody knows that.
And add.